Pas, la fos maîtresse. Pas. La fos maîtresse. I. In September, 1835, one of the richest heiresses of the Faubourg Saint-Germain, Mademoiselle du Rouvre, the only daughter of the Marquis du Rouvre, married Comte Adamigislas Lajinski, a young Polish exile. We ask permission to write these Polish names as they are pronounced, to spare our readers the aspect of the fortifications of consonants by which the slave language protects its vowels, probably not to lose them, considering how few there are. The Marquis du Rouvre had squandered nearly the whole of a princely fortune, which he obtained originally through his marriage with the Demoiselle de Ronquerolles. Therefore, on her mother's side Clementine du Rouvre had the Marquis de Ronquerolles for uncle, and Madame de Serizy for aunt. On her father's side she had another uncle in the eccentric person of the Chevalier du Rouvre, a younger son of the house, an old bachelor who had become very rich by speculating in lands and houses. The Marquis de Ronquerolles had the misfortune to lose both his children at the time of the cholera, and the only son of Madame de Serizy, a young soldier of great promise, perished in Africa in the affair of the Mukta. In these days rich families stand between the danger of impoverishing their children if they have too many, or of extinguishing their names if they have too few, a singular result of the code which Napoleon never thought of. By a curious turn of fortune Clementine became, in spite of her father having squandered his substance on Florine, one of the most charming actresses in Paris, a great heiress. The Marquis de Ronquerolles, a clever diplomatist under the new dynasty, his sister, Madame de Serizy, and the Chevalier du Rouvre agreed, in order to save their fortunes from the dissipations of the Marquis, to settle them on their niece, to whom, moreover, they each pledged themselves to pay 10,000 francs a year from the day of her marriage. It is quite unnecessary to say that the Polish count, though in exile, was no expense to the French government. Comte Adam Lajinski belonged to one of the oldest and most illustrious families in Poland, which was allied to many of the princely houses of Germany. Sapieha, Radziwill, Mniszech, Rutsuowski, Czartoryski, Leksinski, Lubomirski, and all the other great Sarmatianskis. But heraldic knowledge is not the most distinguishing feature of the French nation under Louis-Philippe, and Polish nobility was no great recommendation to the bourgeoisie who were lording it in those days. Besides, when Adam first made his appearance, in 1833, on the Boulevard d'Italia, at Frascati, and at the Jockey Club, he was leading the life of a young man who, having lost his political prospects, was taking his pleasure in Parisian dissipation. At first he was thought to be a student. The Polish nationality had at this period fallen as low in French estimation, thanks to a shameful governmental reaction, as the Republicans had sought to raise it. The singular struggle of the movement against resistance, two words which will be inexplicable 30 years hence, made sport of what ought to have been truly respected, the name of a conquered nation to whom the French had offered hospitality, for whom fetes had been given, with songs and dances by subscription, above all, a nation which in the Napoleonic struggle between France and Europe had given us 6,000 men, and what men? Do not infer from this that either side is taken here, either that of the Emperor Nicholas against Poland, or that of Poland against the Emperor. It would be a foolish thing to slip political discussion into tales that are intended to amuse or interest. Besides, Russia and Poland were both right, one to wish the unity of its empire, the other to desire its liberty. Let us say in passing that Poland might have conquered Russia by the influence of her morals instead of fighting her with weapons, she should have imitated China which, in the end, Chinese the Tartars, and will, it is to be hoped, Chinese the English. Poland ought to have Polonized Russia. Poniatowski tried to do so in the least favorable portion of the empire, but as a king he was little understood, because, possibly, he did not fully understand himself. But how could the Parisians avoid disliking an unfortunate people who were the cause of that shameful falsehood enacted during the famous review at which all Paris declared its will to succor Poland? The Poles were held up to them as the allies of the Republican Party, and they never once remembered that Poland was a republic of aristocrats. From that day forth the bourgeoisie treated with base contempt the exiles of the nation it had worshipped a few days earlier. The wind of a riot is always enough to veer the Parisians from north to south under any regime. It is necessary to remember these sudden fluctuations of feeling in order to understand why it was that in 1835 the word Pole conveyed a derisive meaning to a people who consider themselves the wittiest and most courteous nation on earth, and their city of Paris the focus of enlightenment, with the scepter of arts and literature within its grasp. There are, alas, two sorts of Polish exiles, the Republican Poles, sons of Lelleville, and the noble Poles, at the head of whom is Prince Adam Czartoryski. The two classes are like fire and water, but why complain of that? Such divisions are always to be found among exiles, no matter of what nation they may be, or in what countries they take refuge. They carry their countries and their hatreds with them. Two French priests, who had emigrated to Brussels during the revolution, showed the utmost horror of each other, and when one of them was asked why, he replied with a glance at his companion in misery, "Why? Because he's a Jansenist." Dante would gladly have stabbed a Guelph had he met him in exile. This explains the virulent attacks of the French against the venerable Prince Adam Czartoryski, and the dislike shown to the better class of Polish exiles by the shopkeeping Caesars and the licensed Alexanders of Paris. In 1834, therefore, Adam Mieczysław Lajeńczyk was something of a butt for Parisian pleasantry. "He is rather nice, though he is a Pole," said Rastignac. "All these Poles pretend to be great lords," said Maxime de Trailles, "but this one does pay his gambling debts, and I begin to think he must have property." Without wishing to offend these banished men, it may be allowable to remark that the light-hearted, careless inconsistency of the Sarmatian character does justify in some degree the satire of the Parisians, who, by the by, would behave in like circumstances exactly as the Poles do. The French aristocracy, so nobly succored during the revolution by the Polish lords, certainly did not return the kindness in 1832. Let us have the melancholy courage to admit this, and to say that the Faubourg Saint-Germain is still the debtor of Poland. Was Comte Adam rich, or was he poor, or was he an adventurer? This problem was long unsolved. The diplomatic salons, faithful to instructions, imitated the silence of the Emperor Nicholas, who held that all Polish exiles were virtually dead and buried. The court of the Tuileries, and all who took their cue from it, gave striking proof of the political quality which was then dignified by the name of sagacity. They turned their backs on a Russian prince with whom they had all been on intimate terms during the emigration, merely because it was said that the Emperor Nicholas gave him the cold shoulder. Between the caution of the court and the prudence of the diplomats, the Polish exiles of distinction lived in Paris in the biblical solitude of superflu mina Babylonis, or else they haunted a few salons which were the neutral ground of all opinions. In a city of pleasure, like Paris, where amusements abound on all sides, the heedless gaiety of a Pole finds twice as many encouragements as it needs to a life of dissipation. It must be said, however, that Adam had two points against him: his appearance, and his mental equipment. There are two species of Pole, as there are two species of Englishwoman. When an Englishwoman is not very handsome, she is horribly ugly. Comte Adam belonged in the second category of human beings. His small face, rather sharp in expression, looked as if it had been pressed in a vice. His short nose, and fair hair, and reddish beard and mustache made him look all the more like a goat because he was small and thin, and his tarnished yellow eyes caught you with that oblique look which Virgil celebrates. How came he, in spite of such obvious disadvantages, to possess really exquisite manners and a distinguished air? The problem is solved partly by the care and elegance of his dress, and partly by the training given him by his mother, a Radziwill. His courage amounted to daring, but his mind was not more than was needed for the ephemeral talk and pleasantry of Parisian conversation. And yet it would have been difficult to find among the young men of fashion in Paris a single one who was his superior. Young men talk a great deal too much in these days of horses, money, taxes, deputies. French conversation is no longer what it was. Brilliancy of mind needs leisure and certain social inequalities to bring it out. There is, probably, more real conversation in Vienna or St. Petersburg than in Paris. Equals do not need to employ delicacy or shrewdness in speech, they blurt out things as they are. Consequently, the dandies of Paris did not discover the great seigneur in the rather heedless young fellow who, in their talks, would flit from one subject to another, all the more intent upon amusement because he had just escaped from a great peril, and, finding himself in a city where his family was unknown, felt at liberty to lead a loose life without the risk of disgracing his name. But one fine day in 1834 Adam suddenly bought a house in the Rue de la Pépinière. 6 months later his style of living was second to none in Paris. About the time when he thus began to take himself seriously he had seen Clémentine du Rouvre at the opera and had fallen in love with her. A year later the marriage took place. The salon of Madame d'Espard was the first to sound his praises. Mothers of daughters then learned too late that as far back as the year 900 the family of the Lajeńczyk was among the most illustrious of the North. By an act of prudence which was very un-Polish, the mother of the young count had mortgaged her entire property on the breaking out of the insurrection for an immense sum lent by two Jewish bankers in Paris. Comte Adam was now in possession of 80,000 francs a year. When this was discovered society ceased to be surprised at the imprudence which had been laid to the charge of Madame de Serizy, the Marquis de Ronquerolles, and the Chevalier du Rouvre in yielding to the foolish passion of their niece. People jumped, as usual, from one extreme of judgment to the other. During the winter of 1836, Comte Adam was the fashion, and Clementine Laginska one of the queens of Paris. Madame Laginska is now a member of that charming circle of young women represented by Madame de Listaurade, de Portenduire, Marie de Vandenesse, Duguesnic, and de Maufrigneuse, the flowers of our present Paris, who live at such immeasurable distance from the parvenus, the vulgarians, and the speculators of the new regime. This preamble is necessary to show the sphere in which was done one of those noble actions, less rare than the calumniators of our time admit, actions which, like pearls, the fruit of pain and suffering, are hidden within rough shells, lost in the gulf, the sea, the tossing waves of what we call society, the century, Paris, London, St. Petersburg, or what you will. If the axiom that architecture is the expression of manner and morals was ever proved, it was certainly after the insurrection of 1830, during the present reign of the House of Orleans. As all the old fortunes are diminishing in France, the majestic mansions of our ancestors are constantly being demolished and replaced by species of phalansteries, in which the peers of July occupy the third floor above some newly enriched empirics on the lower floors. A mixture of styles is confusedly employed. As there is no longer a real court or nobility to give the tone, there is no harmony in the production of art. Never, on the other hand, has architecture discovered so many economical ways of imitating the real and the solid, or displayed more resources, more talent, in distributing them. Propose to an architect to build upon the garden at the back of an old mansion, and he will run you up a little Louvre overloaded with ornament. He will manage to get in a courtyard, stables, and if you care for it, a garden. Inside the house he will accommodate a quantity of little rooms and passages. He is so clever in deceiving the eye that you think you will have plenty of space, but it is only a nest of small rooms, after all, in which a ducal family has to turn itself about in the space that its own bakehouse formerly occupied. The hotel of the Comtesse Laginska, Rue de la Pépinière, is one of these creations, and stands between court and garden. On the right, in the court, are the kitchens and offices, to the left the coach house and stables. The porter's lodge is between two charming porte cochères. The chief luxury of the house is a delightful greenhouse contrived at the end of a boudoir on the ground floor which opens upon an admirable suite of reception rooms. An English philanthropist had built this architectural bijou, designed the garden, added the greenhouse, polished the doors, bricked the courtyard, painted the window frames green, and realized, in short, a dream which resembled, proportions accepted, George IV's pavilion at Brighton. The inventive and industrious Parisian workmen had molded the doors and window frames, the ceilings were imitated from the Middle Ages or those of a Venetian palace, marble veneering abounded on the outer walls. Steinbach and François Suchet had designed the mantelpieces and the panels above the doors, Schinner had painted the ceilings in his masterly manner. The beauties of the staircase, white as a woman's arm, defied those of the Hotel Rothschild. On account of the riots and the unsettled times, the cost of this folly was only about 1,100,000 francs, to an Englishman a mere nothing. All this luxury, called princely by persons who do not know what real princes are, was built in the garden of the house of a purveyor made a Croesus by the Revolution, who had escaped to Brussels and died there after going into bankruptcy. The Englishman died in Paris, of Paris. For to many persons Paris is a disease, sometimes several diseases. His widow, a Methodist, had a horror of the little nabob establishment, and ordered it to be sold. Comte Adam bought it at a bargain, and how he came to do so shall presently be made known, for bargains were not at all in his line as a grand seigneur. Behind the house lay the verdant velvet of an English lawn shaded at the lower end by a clump of exotic trees, in the midst of which stood a Chinese pagoda with soundless belfries and motionless golden eggs. The greenhouse concealed the garden wall on the northern side, the opposite wall was covered with climbing plants trained upon poles painted green and connected with crossway trellises. This lawn, this world of flowers, the graveled paths, the simulated forest, the verdant palisades, were contained within the space of 5 and 20 square rods, which are worth today 400,000 francs, the value of an actual forest. Here, in this solitude in the middle of Paris, the birds sang, thrushes, nightingales, warblers, bullfinches, and sparrows. The greenhouse was like an immense jardiniere, filling the air with perfume in winter as in summer. The means by which its atmosphere was made to order, torrid as in China or temperate as in Italy, were cleverly concealed. Pipes in which hot water circulated, or steam, were either hidden underground or festooned with plants overhead. The boudoir was a large room. The miracle of the modern Parisian fairy-named architecture is to get all these many and great things out of a limited bit of ground. The boudoir of the young countess was arranged to suit the taste of the artist to whom Comte Adam entrusted.